Welcome to Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, D.C. One of the main complaints among African entrepreneurs or anyone doing business in Africa is the lack of access to financial resources, the kind of resources they would need to grow and expand their businesses. Traditional financial service providers like banks have often been hesitant to give loans to small or medium businesses, you know, the kind that are either just starting up or struggling to expand, or as they say in the banking industry, businesses that are not credit worthy. Now, this presents a problem for a continent that needs an all-hands-on-deck approach. In most African countries have a goal to achieve middle-income status by 2030. So it is problematic because the drivers of these economies are the small and medium businesses. The same businesses that we see struggling to access loans, you know, fast, affordable, and reliable loans. But economists are now saying that there's good reason to be hopeful because of the possibilities presented by financial technology innovators. Financial technology, or fintech, has been described by experts as this intersection of financial services and technology. In Africa, fintech companies are either small startups that see an opportunity in this space, or even large banks that are becoming aware of the need to be more adaptive to the marketplace. So fintech companies essentially use technology to provide financial services and solutions, usually at a much lower cost, and are often less stringent in their requirements for security or collateral. So on the show today, we'll talk about some of the opportunities presented by these fintech companies, and if this is a solution that young African entrepreneurs or small to medium enterprises have been waiting on. This is Upfront. Let us start off by listening to your opinions. For young people who are starting out in business, how hard is it to access business loans? Let's listen to your voices.
It is hard for the youth to get financing for business projects in the country, especially here in Malawi, because the banks don't trust the youth.
They say that when you give somebody maybe like money to use as a business, she or he is not going to manage to work the money. They say that you don't have like much intelligence on how to lead a business rather than a man or old person.
Because many youth are not well educated and they can't have even get jobs inside the country.
When we see our country here, there is too big problem to Malawian youth, and it's so hard to get financial to start on your business. You should have to find another way you can generate income and start your own business.
I'm Sarah Abdallah, Kampala, Uganda. It's very difficult in most of the financial institutions to go and take loans because maybe I don't have something to work as a collateral security.
I'm Kenneth Nyam. I'm a Nigerian and I stay in Uganda. And definitely, starting up a business, you have to have an owner's equity. And starting up a business, the capital is very important. So I'm not sure it's easy to have the capital because sometimes people go to borrow. After borrowing, some take loans from banks, some take loans from families and other stuff. So you just have to have owner's equity. So it's not easy.
Welcome to Upfront on the Voice of America. If you're just joining us, we welcome you and thank you for joining us. My name is Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, D.C. We're talking about fintech and the possibilities that fintech companies present to small and medium enterprises across the continent and young entrepreneurs who are not necessarily being embraced by traditional or legacy financial institutions like banks. Because most times when young people want to open businesses, they're turned down by these banks because they often require for you to have some form of security or collateral. And so experts say that mobile phone penetration and mobile banking have changed the financial services sector in sub-Saharan Africa. They have revolutionized the financial services sector. Entrepreneurs, small and medium businesses are able to access financial products and services with a level of ease that was previously unavailable to Africans. And across the continent, we see new fintech companies providing platforms that small business owners can use to access credit lines or lines of credit that these companies can use to expand their business. And one of such companies is Ovamba Solutions. I spoke to Viola Llewellyn, one of the co-founders and general manager of Ovamba Solutions, currently operating in Cameroon, and asked her how the company operates.
We have found that the informal sector does not get as much support to grow and doesn't have services innovated for them because of the traditional idea of collateral, for example.
Absolutely.
Not all young women who are entrepreneurs have land. There are some cultural groups,
or
young men, and I was going to further say, maybe these same women may belong to a particular ethnic group whereby women are not allowed to own property, and so therefore she doesn't have land title. Or take the more pervasive situation where we have things like functional illiteracy, whereby you'll have an individual as a great business owner, but he's not going to be able to get online and fill out an application or go into a bank. How do we help individuals like that? Those are the problems that we solve while at the same time providing capital for growth. So when you have somebody like that, our trade-oriented product, which we call growth as a service, allows us to say, all right, we're going to buy the goods that you want, whether it's international or domestically. The goods will belong to Ovamba. That means that the goods themselves are the collateral. We no longer have to put people through these lengthy processes of trying to find land title, hand over property, get an additional guarantee. These are the things that banks do. It doesn't work.
But Ovamba, in essence, is taking risk in itself by backing this purchase.
Our money comes from high net worth individuals and institutional investors.
Who are interested in the model or in helping the community?
Both. Our social impact cannot be denied, and many of them understand that. Some people come to us because I love the idea of being able to do something other than aid or charity. Some people come to us because they absolutely believe in the returns that emerging markets can provide. Mm. So it all depends. We have different types of investors who are with us for different reasons. One of the things that is very interesting about what you're pointing out, Jackson, is people think that in order to be successful, there should be no risk. That is nonsense. There needs to be measured risk. There needs to be risk that is understood, mitigated against, blended into a portfolio where you have high performance and maybe not so much performance. On our continent right now in Africa, most people's approach to successful support of SMEs is about, we must get rid of all risk. That's not the approach that we take. We take an approach to solve the issues that affect the risk.
Now, there's a lot of risks, obviously, in processes. How do you analyze some of the risks?
Give me an example of what you're looking for.
Political volatility.
That is a very meaningful thing. Yes. And in recent days, and let's be transparent, we've had some of that in Cameroon itself. Well, aside from going to people like OPEC and all the rest of those places, we do know that our technology is able to, based on where you are, who you work with, our trawl of social media, certain indicators, those people who come from the government, as many civil servants have businesses, we don't fund them. Areas where
because
there is...
Because there's a political attachment...
The political attachment, their approach to business, the fact that it's not their full-time job, and their performance models are not very good at all. And a lot of the time, the sorts of businesses that they're involved in are ones that we don't fund. For example, real estate development. We don't do that. Or they may have attachments to oil and gas. We don't deal with the oil and gas space in terms of extractive activities because they're not in the best interest of our continent, especially if there's no transformation attached to that. So ethically speaking, doesn't fall in our bailiwick at all. Political exposure. There are some countries we can't work in just yet because they are not settled. The systems are not in place. We are not able to operate with clarity with certain operators. So that's where we make the sensible decision that we're not going to be able to go there.
You mentioned Cameroon, and I read that that's one of the countries, or the country that where your headquarters are?
Yes,
correct?
That's where our pilot started.
Your African operations are all your pilot that started. Why specifically Cameroon?
For personal and professional reasons. Personally speaking, although I was born in London and raised in London and was one of the members of the diaspora that had zero intention of having anything to do with the land of my parents, it is a good thing that my mother took me to school there from the age of 12 to 16. Mm. Otherwise, I would have no ability to connect. It's what I call the Joseph complex. For those of you out there that enjoy reading your Bible, I only know a little bit about it, but if Joseph hadn't left and gone to Egypt, his brothers would not have had outside help. Well, that's what, to me, the diaspora is. And then the other reason is Cameroon as a economic microcosm is very interesting. 262 different tribes, French and English language running concurrently, French and English laws running at the same time, Muslims and Christians working in the same environment. So as a testing petri dish and one of the most difficult places to do business, if you can get it there, if you can get it right there, you probably got a good chance somewhere else.
Of succeeding in Rwanda,
exactly.
More of a monolithic...
That is true. And the fact that Francophone Africa doesn't get much attention, especially from America, and we're an American company, we've planted our flag there, and also the fact that when things go wrong, they go wrong rather quickly. So if you're a startup looking to pivot, which is what every entrepreneur understands, that no matter how great the idea in your head, you're not going to survive contact with reality without the ability to adjust and pivot away. So some of the ideas that we had when we started truly were never going to work, as we found out. And Cameroon was gracious enough to tell us when we had it wrong, quite loudly.
You say that you don't source your funding from traditional banking. You get money from high net worth individuals, rich people, basically.
That is correct, whether they are on the continent or not.
What is their interest in giving you money? How do you...
Well, like our Japanese partners, Crowd Credit, there are many regions of the world that would very much like to invest in Africa. But the narrative that has been afoot up until recently is that your best way to secure your risk is to be involved in something that has a sovereign guarantee and while you're working with the government. Mm. But when that happens, there's not an awful lot of trickle down of opportunity to small and medium enterprises who might want to have an involvement in maybe a set-aside, because there are no set-asides. It's not America, so it doesn't work out. And when we went out to the market, speaking with people like Crowd Credit, they made it very clear. Their region of the world has a fair amount of liquidity and not many assets. Africa is very asset-rich. There are opportunities based on difficulties. If you can innovate around those difficulties and create products, then you've got something that's investable. And we've been able to do that. And so institutional investors looking for different places to diversify their portfolios have often wanted to invest in Africa.
How are you different from, say, they're called Njangis?
Oh, the Njangis are one of the greatest things. And the fact that you know that word is very impressive, Jackson. Also known as tontines, right, in some places, or partner money, susu, box, sackos, all of these things. Njangis are not regulated. In some places, they're actually considered illegal. I hope that's not the case because they're an important part of the community ecosystem.
Right.
Njangis do a very good job of lending money between each other, very similar to peer-to-peer. Before there was peer-to-peer, there were Njangis, thousands of years.
Mm.
So that's the difference between us and them.
Okay.
Njangis also don't attract institutional investment capital.
That was Viola Llewellyn, one of the co-founders and the managing director of Ovamba Solutions. She was talking to us from Washington, D.C.
My name is Barija Deuse. I'm staying in Kauku, Kampala, Uganda. On my side, it's very difficult. And it is not easy to get capital to start the business because even if I didn't have a job, it means I can't start a business because business needs money. I can't get loan because I didn't have a job. I can't pay that money for that loan, even if I didn't have a job. Because you are going to give me that money and I put in business, if business can fail, it is really hard.
I'm Alinda Priska. I'm in Bunga, Kampala. I'm a business person, yeah? I sell electronics. I may say that it's hard. It's not easy, to finance a business project, because there are many challenges that people get, like even money. It's not easy to get. Yeah, it may be easy for me, because according to the money, that person will see the money I'm asking, then compare the business I have, then they will get what I want. When I don't have business, of course, it can't be easy.
So far in DC, in our Kampala here, if you go to get a loan before they give you money, you must have like a house, you must have a car, you must have a shop. For me, I don't have. It is hard. Steady it for me, girl, hold steady. I
wanna put you in my life. Welcome back. This is Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. Now, even though Africa's agriculture sector contributes to over 30% of the continent's GDP, and almost 60% of the people on the continent are engaged in some sort of in some form of small-scale farming, farmers often struggle to access financing that they need to grow their businesses. Our next guest is Mary Joseph of Farm Drive, a company based in Kenya. Farm Drive provides financial institutions with data on the credit worthiness of small-scale farmers as they work to secure loans to grow their businesses.
So you're correct. Agriculture is pretty much one of the biggest contributors to Africa's GDP and you know, the economy, with the majority of Africans participating in some way in the agriculture sector. And unfortunately, they're unable to access credit, primarily because these financial institutions don't actually know how to assess the risk of lending to them. So if a traditional business owner walked into a bank and asked for a loan, the bank would say, okay, show us your business records, show us how much you have in assets that you could put up for collateral, and we're going to look up your credit history. But for a smallholder farmer who maybe only has 5 acres of land, may not be, you know, fully literate, probably doesn't keep records of their businesses, they're not going to be able to provide this information to the financial institution, and they'll therefore just be deemed uncreditworthy, when actually it's just that the data that's being looked at isn't suitable for their business. Yeah, what we've done at FarmDrive is create a credit scoring model that's based off of alternative data that is relevant to the businesses of smallholder farmers. So we're looking at data that's relevant for weather, relevant to agriculture, such as weather, climate, soil data, but also newer sets of data that weren't really previously available for the population that we're looking at, such as satellite imagery, mobile data, even socio-demographic and behavioral data, which we are developing ourselves through an app that we connect with the farmers through.
Okay.
So, that's essentially the problem that we're trying to solve. We've been around for about 3 years now is when the company was founded, but we've been in operation for about a year and a half. Thus far, touched the lives of about 3,000 farmers and their families. So we're really excited for what we've been doing and where we're going.
Anyway, right now I know that you're operational in Kenya. Are you hoping to expand? Is this a model or blueprint that can be used anywhere in Africa, given that agriculture is such a widely practiced around the continent?
Absolutely. We're building a scalable solution that can be eventually used in any country in Africa and really globally. Smallholder farmers are not only on this continent, but across the world. So right now we're in Kenya. Our founders are Kenyan, so it made the most sense for us to start in the market that they knew best. So we're piloting here and really refining our model and hoping to start expanding next year, first to Uganda and other East African countries, and then eventually throughout the whole continent.
You said you're telling us about the data sets that you collect and then you pass on to the banks. What do these data sets look like?
So we have essentially two methods of collecting data. So the first is our mobile app, which runs on SMS that farmers are able to interact with. So this is our main mode of getting kind of farm-level data directly from the farmers. So, you know, what are their cash flows, their incomes, what are they planting, when are they planting, how big their acreage is, all that type of data that we need to get directly from the farmers, in addition to identity data as well, like their ID number, their name, age, et cetera. And then we pair that data with data that we get from external data sources, and this is from our many great partners that we're working with, such as Godan, Aware, Planet, which provides satellite imagery. So that those are the main ways that we get the data, and all of that is then fed into our machine learning algorithm, which we've built internally with our great data scientists and software engineers. And basically that machine learning algorithm crunches all of that data and is able to then come up with a score for the individual farmer to say how likely they are, how willing and able they are to pay back a loan of a certain amount.
Do these financial institutions or the banking institutions already have some sort of loan packages or financial packages that were targeting farmers? I would imagine that since you're presenting them with new types of data sets, things that are non-traditional to them, that they will be a little hesitant to get on board with it. How are you able to sell it to them?
The answer to the first question of whether they have products, the answer is yes and no. Many financial institutions will have products for larger commercial farmers, but not necessarily for the farmers that we're targeting, which are, you know, bottom of the pyramid, smallholder farmers. The ones that do target, you know, lower income populations, they tend to not be specified. They're just general loans, small micro loans, right? But in the realm of specific loans that are targeted towards smallholder farmers, that are developed in such a way that that they meet the economic and agronomic needs of the smallholder farmers so that they can succeed, there's very little out there. Like I said, most of the financial institutions aren't lending to them, so they're also not creating the products that are necessary for the farmers as well. So that's part of our service that we offer to the financial institutions, helping them develop those products as well, because that goes into making sure that you have a good loan portfolio. So it's not only you know, picking out the clients who are most likely to pay back, but also developing products that are going to be most likely to be paid back as well.
Do you contact individual farmers? Do you work with a cooperative group? So separate them, whether they're subsistence farmers or commercial farmers or based on crops?
So we only work with commercial farmers, but, you know, very small holder farmers. So pretty much the level just above subsistence. So they're not large commercial farmers. They're not exporting. They're typically not part of any type of large cooperative or structured value chain, but they're not doing this just for subsistence. They are business owners. They have an agribusiness. That's who we work with. We connect to these farmers through various types of partners. So that includes, for example, development organizations who have programs that they're running with farmers and therefore have access to thousands of farmers, and we can tap into that network. We also work with input suppliers, off-takers, FMCG companies, even like irrigation companies, things like that. So anyone who has a network of farmers who can benefit from getting the types of loans that we are helping to facilitate, we try to reach out to them and work with them to kind of spread the word out about Farm Drive.
If you're just joining us, this is Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. On the phone with me is Mary Joseph of Farm Drive, a company based in Kenya. Farm Drive works to provide financial institutions with data on the creditworthiness of small-scale farmers around Kenya. These farmers are often looking for more money, for loans, for credit to grow or expand their businesses. Now, you're just starting out in the business. You've been around for 2 years, 3 years now?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What kind of growth potential do you see for both the farmers and the financial institutions? What are your projections?
So for the farmers, we see them most definitely increasing their incomes, but most importantly, increasing their stability and their resilience towards shocks in their lives. We want them to be able to produce enough and get their produce to market so that they have extra capital that they can invest back in their farms, but also in their families for things like school fees, insurance, et cetera, so that they can be better prepared, better educated, pretty much just live better lives. For the financial institutions, we're helping them tap into a huge market. As I've already said, the smallholder farmer market is huge. It's, you know, one of the largest economic groups within Africa. And for a bank to not be able to tap into this, it's a huge amount of lost potential revenue.
Absolutely.
So for them, we're helping them increase their revenues, increase their portfolios.
Okay. And I know you probably, you know, answered this, but just to get an understanding, you know, like we said, there is a gap, a funding gap in the agriculture sector, and a sector that has a lot of potential since, you know, the majority of people on the continent engage in some sort of farming. I would imagine that any financial organization or institution that wants to make profits for its shareholders would be looking into tapping into this market of potential borrowers. Why do you think that financial institutions on the continent were hesitant to have products for small-scale farmers?
I think it's two reasons. I think, one, they perceive it as being risky because they're not looking at the right data. So most of these financial institutions aren't, you know, looking at the weather data or the soil testing data, the same data sets that we're looking at. So they can't predict what's going to happen. The quality of an agribusiness isn't only dependent upon the quality of the farmer, but also with the, you know, weather patterns and the soil nutrients, right? Hmm. So there are many factors that they're not looking at, and that makes them very risk-averse. Additionally, when you're looking at smallholder farmers, because their farms are so small, it's costly to work with a few number of financial institutions, or sorry, a few number of smallholder farmers. If a financial institution's risk assessment model is that they have someone go to the business, then they're sending one of their loan officers into, you know, probably the middle of nowhere to go see a small farm that's maybe only 1 acre in size, and this person is only asking for $50 or $100 in a loan. It doesn't make sense financially for a financial institution to do that. However, what the way to be successful in lending to smallholder farmers is really through volume. So lending to one smallholder farmer isn't going to make you a lot of profits, but lending to thousands of smallholder farmers, that's where the profits and the margins start to get quite large. And so I think financial institutions haven't had a scalable way to tap the market. Therefore, you know, they say it's not feasible. It's not worth it for us to go after these small farmers when we can just continue going after large commercial farmers. So what FarmDrive is doing is creating a scalable way that actually makes it feasible for the financial institutions to do this, which is now going to open the market. It's going to pique their interest, which we've already actually been seeing. Financial institutions are already looking into this, development organizations, governments, everyone is trying to figure out how to lend to smallholder farmers. So we're the ones really kind of coming at it from this credit perspective or this credit scoring perspective in a scalable digital way. Mm. So we're hoping that is going to be something that really drives credit to them, and we can be a central factor in that, I guess.
Okay. Now, finally, as we wind down our conversation with Mary Joseph of FarmDrive, can you explain to us some of the basic technical aspects of how do the farmers access the funds? What kind of platform do they use to interact with the lenders, with these financial institutions?
So we use mobile money for all of the loan disbursements. So I can walk you through basically the farmer's journey. Mm. So a farmer would hear about FarmDrive and learn about our short code. From there, they would SMS FD to our short code, and they would be able to register by answering just a couple of questions. What's your name? What's your ID number? From there, they receive another series of questions over the course of 10 days that seek to gather more data on the farmers. I talked about this a little bit before, but like, you know, where are you located? How big is your farm? What are you growing? How many cows do you have? Etc. During those 10 days, they're also encouraged to keep records of their revenues and expenses so that we have some insight into their income and their cash inflows and outflows as well. Mm-hmm. So after that, they then become eligible to apply for a loan. So when they apply for a loan, we're able to automatically score them and do make the credit decision based off of the business rules that we've received from the financial institution. So if they're approved, they get sent the loan terms, and if they accept the loan terms, their money is dispersed automatically through mobile money. So that's how they receive the loans, and that's how they kind of, that's the interaction between with the financial institution. It typically comes through us. We kind of serve as the middle.
That was Mary Joseph of FarmDrive, a company based in Kenya. And with that, we come to the end of the show. I want to thank all our guests on the show today, Viola Llewellyn of Ovamba Solutions in Cameroon, and Mary Joseph, one of the directors of FarmDrive, a company based in Kenya. And thank you to all our listeners for joining us today. If you have any questions, send us an email at upfront@voanews.com. You can connect with me on Twitter at upfrontafrica.
check out our Facebook page, keywords Upfront Africa Show. Like the page, share, subscribe, leave a message for us, and let us know what you think about the show and some of the topics you want us to cover on our next show. Let's connect again next week right here on The Voice of America. Goodbye.
Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight.